Spada bonus edition, and right now we're going to talk about a little thing called intersectionality. So there was recently an article in The Nation titled, Elizabeth Warren is running an unapologetically intersectional campaign.
Cool.
By one Susanna Denuta Walters. Subtitled, as much as I want Medicare for all and the rich to pay higher taxes, that won't cure sexism. Warren gets that. Where have I heard this before?
Quick note, I believe it was called the Elizabeth Warren is the first intersectional candidate or something. And then they changed it because people brought up Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, wow. Right. That is peak White House.
Remind people who Shirley Chisholm was for at home, who Shirley Chisholm was.
I don't remember which year, but it was she ran for president, black woman who was, I believe, a representative who ran for president.
New York City, right?
Yeah. With a unusually left platform.
Wow.
There you go.
They really need to apologize for silencing black voices.
Nobody apologizes anymore. They get ratioed on Twitter and then they just take down the headline and put up another one, right? Like the New York Times did that like four times in the last month.
Yeah, that's listening and learning, okay?
Literal erasure.
Literal. Down the memory hole.
So the first thing that comes to mind reading this subhead is when Hillary Clinton once upon a time said, oh, breaking up the banks won't solve racism.
Right.
And that's like, I'll give Elizabeth Warren credit for being a bit better than that. But this is going in that direction. I took out some excerpts from this. So maybe we could
give us some of this
as we go and get everyone's take.
This is a real Rad Lib Hours. Is that what we're talking about here?
I mean, I don't know if this even deserves the title of Rad Lib because it's just not that radical.
No, just Lib.
Like Rad Libs are like anarchists without a material analysis. I don't know.
Or Libs or us. I mean, many people call us Rad Libs for some reason.
Yeah, I get called a Rad Lib all the time. I mean, I've been called everything in the book. It's fine. But let's take some quotes out of this here. All right. Ahem. When Warren reads off the names of murdered trans women, not at an LGBTQ event, and pledges to do so every year in the Rose Garden, she brings the margin to the center, as bell hooks put it, making visible the ways in which race, class, gender, and sexuality live in particular bodies in particular ways.
The bodies. Oh, my God. The bodies thing. I don't know. That's already one of my pet peeves.
And earlier in the piece, she cited the Combahee River Collective as explainers and activists who incorporated intersectionality into their platform.
We did an entire episode on how they're actually black lesbian Marxists.
Yeah, and two of them have now endorsed Bernie Sanders.
Right.
So that's fucking garbage in and of the first place. Learn your history. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to read the names of murdered trans women in the Rose Garden if you are also going to give all trans people affordable health care, including transition coverage. But her waffling on Medicare for all has a lot of working class trans people concerned.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, this is part and parcel, I think, with maybe one of the larger themes of that we want to address in this episode, which is that, you know, this idea that mere representation or mere calling attention to a particular issue or the travails of a certain group of people, whereas that used to work in the past, it doesn't seem like this election cycle, now that there is, you know, an actual democratic socialist who's running, doesn't seem to have the same purchase as it's had in the past. So in addition to not actually addressing, you know, why trans people are disproportionately murdered, it doesn't even purport to do anything besides, you know, raise alarm about something that's happening to these people.
It's symbolism, right? I mean, it came up in the debate that the issue of rights for trans people came up, and Bernie's response was about universal health care. Warren's response was this one about, reading a list of names in the Rose Garden. And it just really delineated what the distinction is, that on one hand, you're talking about material improvements to people's lives. On the other hand, you're talking about a kind of abstract recognition.
You're talking about the universal, right, which is that all Americans, all working class people would get Medicare for all. And then you're talking about the particular, you know, as much as we care about the rights of trans people, right, it's this one group of people that we're going to be representing on the Rose Garden like once a year. It's not the same.
Well, look, there are some particular issues that need to be addressed, right? Sure. If I thought she had a plan that would actually reduce the incidence of murders of LGBT exactly. people in this country, that would be different. But, like, I'll continue and we'll see a little bit more.
Andy, how did you have something on this?
Yeah, I was just saying it's also a question of form and content, because there's this concept of visibility. And it is important that that trans people are visible as, like, normal people, or, like, not some marginal aberration, or, like, these freaks who, like, lurk in the shadows. It's good that they're represented in some way. But if it's just only representation, if you're just only acknowledging that they exist and they're killed and subject to violence, that doesn't do anything, that doesn't change the content of their lives at all.
It's this bizarre theory of change where you're trying to, I guess, shift people's hearts and minds. Like, I guess transphobes are all of a sudden going to stop being transphobic if you know, make these issues visible. I just don't think that that's the case.
Let's keep going. We'll go forward. Let's hear her out, okay?
All right.
I feel like I started this in the middle, but that's fine. Quote, now we're going to talk about feminism. So, guys, listen to women, listen to me, listen to things I say. That's feminism. Okay. A robustly feminist intersectional agenda, intersectional approach is more than trickle-down Marxism.
The fuck does that mean?
Sanders' plans remain stubbornly issue-based. She puts issues in scare quotes. With a meta-story of class that seems to believe that power is racially and gender neutral.
Just the use of meta-story there just makes me think of the worst postmodern garbage. Yeah. You know, there's no, you know, meta-analysis. There's no, the discourse, you know, is not as universal and teleological. Shut the fuck up. Fuck you, Foucault.
So, for example, on his website, his first issue is, quote, a welcoming and safe America for all. And, no surprise, immigration, ICE, and DACA are on the agenda here.
Oh, good. So he did good.
But what about women who are not safe in an America that breeds toxic masculinity and shrugs off sexual violence? What about trans folk who are murdered at disproportionately higher rates? To treat each issue as self-evidently about a particular demographic is precisely what intersectionality is not.
That lost me on the last sentence. What does that?
That's
what
gibberish.
That mean?
What is the point even?
She wants. I think she wants a change in the rhetoric. Is all I'm going to say. It seems like intersectionality is more about tone and acknowledgments and even analysis than content. It's about the words. It's about saying.
If she's
the magic
calling
words.
For a coalition in which people think of improvements in material conditions as being collective and universal. That's what socialist politics is about, and that's what she seems to be taking as her object of critique somehow.
Yeah.
Well,
what is she
weird.
Supposed to be proposing in contrast?
Even this last sentence here, again, to treat such scare quote issue as self-evidently about a particular demographic is precisely what intersectionality is not.
Like,
so is pointing it out these particular issues good or bad? I don't understand it.
Is it not? I mean, it's weird because when I think about intersectionality in the good way, I mean, maybe it's totally ruined and I should just use some other word that doesn't have all these horrible, like, neoliberal academy woke connotations. I think specifically, like, oh, yeah, you need a plan to address things that affect specific groups of people in specific ways, like immigrants. And that seems like what he's doing there, but apparently not. So we continue.
Bizarre.
Intersectionality also can and should have a tone, an affect. When Sanders supporters
we need
claim,
a police, but for tone.
Mm-hmm. When Sanders supporters claim, as Nancy Fraser and Liza Featherstone do in Jacobin,
Friends of the show,
tread carefully, that he is, quote, the only candidate in the race who is advancing a politics that will actually improve the lives of all those women, and dismiss any supporters of other candidates as dupes, quote, suckered by cynical invocations of feminism.
Feminism who, has quote, never been invoked cynically before.
Who, quote, seek to undermine a progressive mass movement. They display a hubris that is at odds with both the facts and the passionate commitments to broad-based social justice of Warren and her supporters. So right there, people, right there, you see, you do not have any fucking right to say this when your candidate wants to means test her child care program and Bernie fucking does it. Also, how is it at odds with the facts? How is it at, like, you're saying that it's disrespectful towards Warren and her supporters' commitment to social justice, and then you don't respond to the actual.
Well, that's what it comes down to. There's no substance here. It's just all about, like, I have my opinion and you've got to, like, show deference to it. Like, that's purely the argument here.
But without any sort of, like, material way to change that, what's the point of even bringing it up? It's back to this visibility thing. It's like, okay, I see a problem. We've acknowledged it now. Does that mean it's gone? You haven't done anything about
it. It's just very weird because, like, something like universal child care, it's very clear to see how this affects women disproportionately to other people. And if you're going to somehow try to twist this around and use it as an argument against the person with the policies that would help women the most, like, the burden of proof is on you to show how your policies are better.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a willful obfuscation of that fact. So, moving on to racism.
There's more, okay.
Ditto racism. As Warren aptly noted in a speech in 2015, pointing out that, quote, economic justice has never been sufficient to ensure racial justice, owning a home won't stop someone from burning a cross in the front lawn. Admission to a school won't prevent a beating on the sidewalk outside. And breaking up the banks won't solve racism. Like, what do we make of this?
Oof, that might be one of those cynical invocations that was mentioned earlier. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Do you remember when Hillary posted a tweet about with an infographic about intersectionality, where she was like, our concerns are all intersectional, and it was like 40 different like words, like buzz phrases.
I missed that one.
They're all like connected in this like interlocking web. I gotta show you this because I'll send it to you because it's incredible.
I need that as the lock image for my phone, just so I walk down the street and make sure I'm intersectional enough.
I also put this up at the top when she calls it intersectionality is politics of respectful attention. And she goes on to say, you know, or maybe this is from a different article I pulled that was also bad in the root, but like Bernie Sanders policies would help, you know, working class people of color, but he's not doing it with the intention of helping them specifically, so it doesn't count. I don't know.
Wow. Okay. So it's about what's in your heart, ultimately, at the end of the day.
Yeah. She also harps on the idea that Elizabeth Warren is listening to and learning from representatives of marginalized communities, which on its face seems good until you realize that most of these people are self-appointed representatives from the academic and nonprofit sectors, which have their own vested class interests.
And also, she didn't seem to care too much before she started running for president.
Fair enough.
She wasn't meeting with, for example, like Cherokee tribes people to talk to them about the
issues. Well, she herself is a representative of that constituency.
Ugh, it's so fucking cringe.
So, you know what? We don't need to read any more of this garbage article. There's more funny ones. Okay.
But let's do other garbage.
I don't think intersectionality is bad at all. I just think when you're a lib using it as a cudgel against the left, that's when it is bad.
Well, let's break it down a little bit. I mean, we've done this before on the show, but like, what's the best faith reading that you can give for intersectionality? Used correctly and used propitiously by the left?
I mean, the best faith reading is that different people are oppressed in different ways, right? We're all subject to these overlapping systems of oppression. And merely focusing on policies that help absolutely everyone in the working class isn't going to target certain particular problems like mass incarceration that affects Black people disproportionately, or like immigration, which affects people from other countries, especially Latin America. And it seems like Bernie's platform is intersectional in that way. The way that it is not intersectional is in terms of often rhetoric and using all of the academically correct terminology, which some marginalized people do legitimately care about and others don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's at its worst, it seems no different from pandering, something that, say, Hillary Clinton was really good at, tokenizing and pandering.
I mean, I think the way you defined it there is something that's self-evidently true, you know, that everyone is defined by different group identities, and that we all find ourselves at the intersection of those different kind of planes of identification, and that you can't just address... a neutral kind of subject. You have to actually talk about historically what has been the way that society has been structured and what hierarchies have been created. You have to deal with that. And I think that's so obvious, and you have to really do like mental contortions to pretend that's not true. So like, I really object to when people on the left want to argue against that. You know, of course you have to deal with the actual conditions of a racist society in order to create conditions of equality. That's obvious to children.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's also a way of talking about it that even people who are more left than like the centrist wing of the Democratic Party, where these groups that have been defined are defined that way because that's where they belong. And so race can be reified, immigration status can be reified within this economic and or social structure. And their concerns are all valid, but they're all valid because they all belong where they are. So, for example, like the fact that Latino immigrants are like so heavily exploited in like in New York City, like the in a variety of like manual labor jobs, that means their concerns for being exploited manual laborers should be heard out. But it doesn't mean that they shouldn't. That they should stop being like the most exploited group,
right?
Yeah. So there's this, it's like a very kind of reactionary intersectionality, whereas the revolutionary kind of intersectionality is that we all actually could join one group together and fight back against a common enemy.
Yeah, that's very evident in this part. This one more part that I popped out where she talks about Warren's plan for, it's literally called her plan for valuing the work of women of color. And
I can think of some ways that we value work, trade unions, for example,
just the passive character of that verb. Yeah. Like what does it mean to value something? But this platform, it contains some things that actually would help working class women of color. Like when we're talking about federal contractors, making sure that if you want a federal contract with the United States government, you have to pay your workers a $15 minimum wage and benefits.
That's good.
That is good. Also, you're not allowed to disallow forced arbitration and collective action waivers. Those are good. I will give her credit for that. But then more of this plan is focused on programs that would help the tiny fraction who rise to the top, such as diversity in leadership programs. And she focuses a lot of this on diversity in leadership, whether we're talking about appointments to the federal government or just like helping people get promotions so that they can kind of navigate the American meritocracy and come out on top of this very unjust system.
I've got a really good story related to that on one of these sort of targeted programs that exist.
There's... Well, my bottom line to this was, I have one more sentence, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Is that she sees class as just one more axis of kind of identity-based oppression,
right,
rather than the thing upon which our economic system is based.
Yeah, sorry. The example's a simple one. There's a minority contractor provision in city, state, and federal contracts in the state of New York. And it says that a certain percentage, I think 20% of construction jobs should be given to, if possible, a contractor with minority ownership, right? So it's set up to make sure that the owners of capital are diverse and okay, fine, whatever. But in practice, there's this large outfit that I've worked for before, and the owner of it is, he's Latino, right? But he is a white Brazilian, Portuguese speaking man who was like, basically came to this country because his parents were part of that ruling class over there. But now he's getting this benefit because it doesn't differentiate between like what your actual background is. He merely is Latino because he's from South America. And they get a ton of contracts off of it. They're one of the biggest contractors out there.
Well, that is often who benefits from this kind of politics of elite representation. And like, if there's a reason why Bernie hasn't talked more about this kind of thing, it's that he has no interest in helping rich people of any race. I really believe that.
This was something, this might be branching off a little bit, but this is something that I was thinking about for the main episode, but we can discuss it here. One of the limitations, or at least one of the things to consider about Bernie Sanders, is that there's nothing that he actually proposes that isn't a position that the left wing of capital is okay with. Right. So by left wing of capital, I mean like the farthest left position that somebody in capitalist society and bourgeois politics could take. Right. That would actually, at the end of the day, structurally be beneficial to some parts of the capitalist class. So Medicare for all, for example. Right. There are tons of swaths of the American economy. I'm thinking specifically about the retail and service sector. Right. Where a fraction of the capitalists will do really, really well. They'll do a lot better if the state takes on health insurance. They don't have to hire as many HR people. They don't have to pay as much to get their workers insured. They don't have to deal with sick workers as much. And ultimately, this points to the limitations of what Sanders is trying to implement, even at its like farthest left fringe, is that all these things ultimately fit well and can be recuperated into the structures that we create. You know, I think like less so than the Elizabeth Warren sort of inclusivity, visibility type thing, right? But I really think that that shows what we said in the main episode is that it's a start, but it can't be the conclusion, right? We need to start pushing towards those policies and those aspects that are unrecuperatable by capital. Even aspects of service would do well if you had increased workers' consumption in the United States because there's more unions, right? Walmart would do better because there'd be more money to spend. Yeah. Of course, everybody's. That's a bit of a digression, but I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, I mean, we do often end up there, don't we? There's also there's like two really funny articles in The Root. I don't know.
Oh,
do we
want to
wrap this up? Or do we want to?
Is this even an episode yet?
Going?
I don't know.
Is this a bonus? I have no idea. I liked the line from one of The Root articles that Bernie's policies include working class black people, but they are not for them. Which, if you ask the average working class person of color if they care if them getting health care is a result of being included or being like some sort of extra intentionality, I'm willing to bet that most people just want fucking health care. But I could be wrong. Maybe I'm silencing minority voices.
It's the type of thing you'll object to if you don't actually need it, you know, if it's just a question of symbolism for you. You know,
Should we read any of this Root article or wrap this thing up?
I mean, that getting into that Root article is like going down a dark, dark hole of place. Why don't you just describe some of the rhetoric in it so we can all cringe together?
Oh, my God. I mean, it starts out as a fairy tale because, as we know, liberals view everything in terms of Harry Potter. There's an evil king, Grump. There's a melanin council that, you know, is apparently headed up by this one writer.
Let's stop and let's dwell on that for a second. What is the Melanin Council? What does that mean? Why is that in this article? Is that a real thing or some Harry Potter invention in this person's head? What the fuck is happening?
And I think it's their sort of personification of black voters choosing who to vote for. Maybe.
It's like a workers' council, but with what?
Maybe. Perhaps. It's not a workers' council because it is a cross-class alliance of, you know, professional class, people of color, mostly them, and like maybe somebody else too.
So it's fascist corporatism.
But
When Dave Chappelle disappeared, I remember there was a conspiracy theory that like Oprah and Bill Cosby and like a couple other like elite African-American celebrities like sat him down and told him to leave the country because he was getting too close to the truth.
I heard that back in the day too. Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that's the same fictional Melanin Council.
Billionaire Oprah is at the head of the Melanin Council, maybe.
Wow. Yeah.
Dangerous.
When they asked Bernie, I'm reading now, if he would condemn white supremacy and stand up for the people in the Melanin Council, he would only say that he planned to help everyone equally. And this
That's bad.
Self-evidently bad. And then We have another line. Damn, they thought, if only there was someone who had Bernie's progressive plan, but was intentional about helping us. Hmm, wonder who that is. They knew there was no perfect candidate, but they wanted someone who was not Amy, smarter than Joe, more likable than Bernie. Damn, that's...
More likable.
Wow,
that's
okay.
Like showing, yeah. More experienced than Pete and kinder than Mike. If they could find that, they knew they could defeat the evil king. The evil king's name is Grump, by the way.
Of course.
So they went to the white allies,
like a Cheeto.
Al-Lies, and asked the pundits if there was anyone else.
Is that an Arabic word?
All lies. But there wasn't. The end. But just kidding. Yes, there is. And God, I gotta find it here. Oh, yeah, it's Elizabeth Warren, obviously.
Right.
That's like spoiler alert.
You had to do control
it's
F.
Her, but everyone's pretending like she doesn't exist, even though she's got the same progressive platforms as Bernie. False, but with more intentionality, possibly true. Here we go. She's displayed the ability to translate her progressive policies into populist ideas. Mm. I think he has this backwards. I think he meant to say translate her populist ideas into progressive policies. That would make more sense here, yeah. Right? Something that Sanders still struggles with. She is intentional about highlighting the scourge of institutional white supremacy, LGBTQ rights, and underrepresented communities. Now, here we go. She's willing to stand up to the rich without demonizing success.
That is the core
She's
of Warrenism.
She's a success win person.
Yeah.
She's careful to explain progressive tax policy as a math problem that will uplift the poor,
yeah.
Implement corporate responsibility, and benefit the middle class.
I mean, this is the heart of the difference, again, between, say, the Sanders campaign for all its flaws and Elizabeth Warren and the rest. It's an idea that, you know, this idea that you can end the conflict, that you can get to like a positive place. You can implement programs that increase inequality without making other people pay for it in real life and politically.
You can tell evil King Grump, like, stop being such a grump. It's okay that you're king. It's okay that you have your throne, but you need to be nicer.
I mean, the thing that this deliberately erases is that if you have the way it put that fairy tale story about Bernie's response is that, like, if you help everyone equally, that's actually going to help certain people disproportionately. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, people who are disproportionately subjugated are going to be the ones who benefit from those types of universities.
Because they start off lower than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like a true Bernie bro. So, yeah, this goes on and on and on, but I think you guys fucking get it. But like, I also want to point out, Warren does not have the support of non-white voters, and I'm not sure how they're going to square that circle. Like, Bernie is the number one candidate among non-white voters. So what do we blame that on?
I mean, I think that our analysis should be that since Elizabeth Warren got less than, I think, 3% of the black vote in South Carolina just yesterday, that it's not all, say, black voters that are in favor of Liz Warren and her policies, but perhaps a class fraction of black voters who see her image of ending the class war on equitable terms with social peace that doesn't upend any of the previous economic and social and political arrangements. They see something attractive in that. Who could it be? Maybe members of the ruling class, maybe shills who are paid to translate what the black, white, and brown ruling class would be interested in as capitalists in this society. I don't know.
But Bernie has a battalion of abusive bros.
Yeah, right.
That's what it says right here. That's some beautiful alliteration. Don't you care about
the
battalion?
Yeah, they won us with battalions. Alliterative battalions. No, the language, let's not even say language. Let's say the discourse is getting very, very toxic as we sit here in March of 2020. I'm sure, though, it's going to get worse because all these people seem to have at this point, especially Liz Warren people, is discourse and tone policing and rhetoric and very disingenuous ways to get past, you know, the real, I think, fundamental flaws that more and more people are seeing in their political program. See, I made an alliteration too.
So here's a question, because this is obviously silly. This is obviously disingenuous. Like, it's identity politics are a class politics when they're being weaponized against the left. And Adolf Reed has done a lot of good work on that. Are there any left critiques that are actually legitimate that could be made of Bernie Sanders in this kind of area?
I don't think he I think that he doesn't go into the race question enough, but not in not like in the intersectional way where he's not like paying enough lip service. But I don't think he talks about like what racism is in the United States as much as he probably understands himself. Like someone who was involved in the civil rights movement and saw all of the, you know, the questions around like the Weathermen and the Black Panthers and SDS and how that devolved in the 70s and like who, you know, probably spent a lot of his time defending like race riots and stuff. Yeah. Like he probably is able to talk about this better than he does.
No, I think you're 100% right. And piggybacking off of that too, like I kind of see Bernie Sanders' politics as they form in the 70s as kind of a reaction to that sort of sectarianism you're talking about, a sort of desire to take the SDS and the Black Panther struggles and the Weathermen and all this confluence of a sectarian sort of leftist infighting and say, no, I'm picking a different tradition. I'm picking the Norman Thomas, Eugene Debs sort of like socialism is Americanism politics, which means that, yes, he's thought through these things and he thinks that the way to go is different from, you know, the militancy that happened before that. I agree. I think he's hiding his power levels. So he could do better, I suppose. Do better. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I think that one of the things people overlook when looking at that history is that a lot of those struggles in the 60s that were called the new social movements were about building coalitions. You had the Rainbow Coalition, you know, of the Black Panthers and the Young Patriots and the Young Lords and so on, of groups that had disparate identities and potentially certain different interests, aligning them because there was a common root to the problem, a common adversary, which was capital, and you know, ultimately a common cause, which was equality and justice. So I think that to talk about these things as though they're in conflict is really ahistorical. And it's not just ahistorical in terms of radicalism, but also in terms of the words and the terminology that people use to make those, to draw those lines. You know, identity politics coming from the Combahee River Collective, which was a coalitional group, you know, which was a group of socialist organizers. Intersectionality being kind of and evoking the same principle of how do we include everybody when movements that are based only on one identity necessarily include members of those groups. So it's, you know, Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined the term intersectionality, the way she put it was coalitions go all the way down. Mm. You know, everybody is entering into a coalition with people from other groups. That's how human, you know, identity works. So I think it's kind of glossing over that history of building coalitions to put those things into conflict.
But more than that, I think, so there's this question of sort of self-interest of like, well, obviously it's in the self-interest of like, of people of color to like, you know, advocate for their rights and to like do better within like a white supremacist economy. But it's, I think the key in a lot of those debates of the 60s was that it's also in white people's self-interest to destroy white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And that's just like, that was like such a major question among white radicals. And it's like not really talked about at all anymore.
Mm. Well, it goes all the way back to W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, who
Of whiteness.
The phrase that's often invoked, the wages of whiteness. That's about a method of preventing the building of coalitions between white workers and black people that Du Bois talked about as being a hindrance to achieving justice, racial justice.
Yeah, like Jay Firestone said on our episode with him, you know, when you throw around racist epithets, when white workers do that, you're playing with fire. You're not just being hurtful or being unwoke. Like, you are actually contributing to the destruction of your own material interests, because racism is a bourgeois ideology that has been used to divide worker from worker for ages and keep people from getting what they deserve.
Okay, but the centrist intersectional person might say, no, there's an alliance between the white worker and the white bourgeoisie, and it's in the interest of the white worker to maintain that relationship. So it's a very controversial point to say, actually, it's not good for the white worker to have that alliance.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why Bernie hasn't gone there, because some people would probably be really offended by it, because I think the conventional liberal wisdom is that racism and race itself are not things that arose from material conditions in history, but they're these essential immutable characteristics of humanity.
Well, here we are going full circle now, because we're talking about Bernie Sanders' intentions, right? And the tone and the affect that he uses. We are doing the Rad Libs work for them. I think maybe because we can't know what's in Bernie's heart of hearts. We don't know what sort of levels of power that he's holding. But we have to assume that because he's old as shit, right? The guy is fucking practically a walking bag of bones, dust at this point.
No, he's not that bad.
He is old as shit.
He's looking pretty.
He's
good.
Just he's falling slightly apart. His stents are the only thing keeping his chest cavity together. No, I'm kidding. But he is old, okay? The guy's going to be like 79 next year. I have to imagine that, like, you know, the same thing I said, that his reaction of like this kind of Trotskyist, you know, SWP ferment of the 1960s towards this sort of American socialism, just like I think we have to assume that he thought that through and didn't just come to it like, I don't know, foolhardily or like in a shallow way. He must have some reason why he talks the way that he talks. Maybe in Burlington he tried as mayor or part of like the Liberty Union Party to talk about abolishing whiteness. You know, maybe like there was an attempt in the groups that he was in to like, you know, help white working class people understand that like their actual racial identity is a hindrance to like their fulfillment as like members of a universal class. I don't know, but it seems like it's intentional, right?
Yeah.
The way that he talks about race.
Well, some people think so. Some people think it's just him being ignorant or uncomfortable speaking on these issues.
Well, I said it sounds like it's intentional. Instead of saying that, why don't I say that it seems like it's determined, right, by the person who he is and the experiences that he's come.
I mean, there's like a normie socialist view on this that's kind of bad, where they say, you know, there's nothing essential about race, which I agree with. These are categories that were historically created. Therefore, righting the wrongs of history, we can't do it with more racial essentialism. We have to ignore these categories that the working class has been divided up into as if they don't exist. And we need to appeal, as long as we just have the correct policy positions on things that will help the material interests of the majority of working class people, we're going to win. That's a winning concept. I agree with where these things came from. I do not agree with how we get rid of them. Like, the working class is divided now. These things, they're abstractions, but they're real, the way they function in society. So the way that we have to deal with them now, even acknowledging that they are abstractions and that they came from somewhere, like, they're real now. And like, yeah. Bernie needs, it's not self-evident to everybody. He needs to connect these dots and he needs to do the work of reaching out to these various communities. And like, I think that's a disagreement that we have. I think that's a disagreement some people had with your brother's book, Shuja.
Right. I mean, you know, the historical traditions that the left should claim are the ones that go back to abolition, that go back to the Haitian Revolution, which are to say that the universal principle is there, which is that no one should be a slave. But in the real world, you have to actually end slavery in order to achieve that goal. And the way that you do that is by recognizing the actual circumstances of history.
And then, as you were saying before, build a coalition in order to destroy it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even the black slaves in Haiti had a coalition was formed between them and what was called the mulatto landowners at that time to abolish the slave system. So it wasn't merely slaves who were able to do it. Of course, it was mostly their action, right? But they needed to build a sort of revolutionary coalition politics in order to actually make that happen.
How that coalition ended in the end, Sean?
Not so good. But that's, again, like the Napoleonic Empire was the CIA of
it
its
a long time.
Yeah.
So to summarize, there's a good kind of identity politics. There's a bad kind of identity politics. If you're using it to, you know, fucking, I'm tired. I'm sorry. If you're using it to shit talk Bernie Sanders, an elected neoliberal technocrat, that's bad. If you're using it to make a more effective working class movement that incorporates and includes everybody in a diverse multiracial working class coalition, that's good. Yeah. I take.
Let's take that forward. And folks, remember always, you're our patrons, so this is behind the wall, so we can say whatever we want right now. Keep up the shit posting, okay? We couldn't say this to the general public, but when you see Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or whoever starting to use these really disingenuous rhetorics that are ultimately destructive of class solidarity, go ahead and put a rat emoji out there. Go ahead and put a snake emoji out there. Feel free to do what I did last week when I got suspended, which is to tell Tom Watson, the alt centrist, lol, die mad ho. It might get you banned for a week, but you can say lol, die mad ho.
Just do it on your personal account, please. Yeah. Not on the shared one.
I didn't. I took the bullet for the team. I went down.
And luckily, since we are such a diverse coalition, we have comrades of all different identity groups that can be weaponized against their evil neoliberal counterparts. For example, the queer radicals who recently protested Pete Buttigieg at a campaign stop, he accused them all of being homophobes. And they were like, oh, fuck off, we're gay. And that's the kind of praxis we like to see, folks.
That's right. Know your enemy. Know the rat, know the snake, and be the mongoose, folks. Be the mongoose. Revolutionary mongoose. We're out.
Dead ass.
Put it in
his face, ay, move like a snake.
Move like a snake, move.